Welcome to the Wisdom Circle. To subscribe or follow us on your favorite podcast platforms, please visit us at www.thewisdomcircle.com.
Welcome to the Wisdom Circle. We are really excited to be here today. I'm excited to be anywhere every day. We have a great guest, my old friend Tony Ponturo, who you all know, co-founder of the Wisdom Circle, his idea. We love to ask everyone to watch, tell your friends, listen, all platforms, we're going to get started. So, Peter Agiovlasidis.
Ooh, I got it. That's pretty good.
Pretty good. I rehearsed. We like to call you Peter A amongst the three of us. So for those of you who don't know, Peter is a keynote speaker, a TED speaker. He's a motivator. He's a MC. He does all sorts of great things, getting people around a common idea. And he's a soon-to-be author, so we'll talk about that. Peter, welcome to the Wisdom Circle.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm so excited. Yeah. With my good friend Ray and Tony here. So this is awesome.
Yeah. We're excited to have you. Tony, one aside you'll appreciate. So I don't know if you know this, Peter, but Tony actually, Rick and D. Ray were looking for a head of sales in 1987-ish.
Right.
And they've gone through the Rolodex of all the executives who were looking for work in New York. And I was not. I was very happy at ABC Network. And Tony said, and this is one of the great moments, well, you'll never get him. But if you could, it'd be great if you could hire Ray Warren.
Wow.
And you know Rick and Dee well enough to know that that was like, oh, the chase is on.
Wow.
I was there. I signed a 3-year contract. I was there for 15 years. But Tony, what you don't know is that when you start working out of the Carolinas on, you know, we hadn't gotten quite national yet. We hadn't built out all the conferences and we hadn't bought the ABC package. Peter was one of those guys. He was like from New York. Because I was talking a lot of Charlotte, a lot of cultural differences and just words that people use. God bless his heart. Oh, yeah. I know what bless his heart means. So anyway, Peter was like this island for me of guys I could talk to who were, from the same part of the world. So I always appreciated that, Peter. I don't know if I told you that or not.
No, you hadn't. But that was a time where we came down to North Carolina, and I said very quickly after living here that they better put up the fence now. Because they're coming down. They're selling their houses up in New York for big money. They're coming down here paying half as much for a house and living a great life. And now, back then, I used to call it sprawl, where it was just going out. Today, it's not sprawl anymore. It's going up. So now, instead of single family homes, they're building townhomes and apartments and stuff, and so the density is getting bad. So now,
wow.
I've always said that I had a job opportunity in Atlanta, but I said I'm not going to New York South, but but now, hate to say it, it's traffic's bad, it's getting worse, and
Well, that's what's happening. They're not building out the infrastructure. Nobody's hopping on buses and trains because they never did in their life.
Tough to get around.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I mentioned Peter's in Raleigh. I mentioned going to Charlotte, but it's right down 85.
Well, I'm not in Raleigh. I'm in the peak of good living, Apex, North Carolina.
Apex,
North Carolina. Just
the peak of good living. Where's that?
That's right outside of Raleigh.
Oh, okay. All right.
I've lived in the three best places to live, according to Money Magazine, I guess. Raleigh, Cary, North Carolina, the concentrated area of relocated Yankees. And then I moved to Apex.
Good for you. So, Tony, don't want it to be me and Peter talking. We thought we'd get started. You want to talk a little bit about where things are and how's your day going and what's going on?
No, I mean, I think, there's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot I know, Peter, we're going to talk a little bit about it in your book, but I know you're going to touch on generational change. And it's interesting. I've been consulting for a young company, 7 years old, with a lot of 25 to 35-year-olds. And this may set up your conversation a little bit, but spent time with 3 days with these young people. I thought everything went well. It did go well. But one of the partners said, they were just so happy you weren't a Bob. And he go, well, what do you mean I wasn't a Bob? Now, for the people who know, Office Space was a movie by Judge who did Beavis and Butthead. And the two consultants were both called Bob. And when I first met them on Zoom calls, my role was to understand their job. Okay, explain to me what you do. So they were fully expecting me to say, well, you don't know what you're doing. You know, you got 4 more hours a day. You can be filling up your timetable and everything else. But once Ray and I talk about this a lot. And in my book, Revenge of the C+ Student, I believe so much in human behavior and making relationships. And that's sort of the mantra that we talked about in Cape Cod for these meetings. So when you then take out the stereotype of what they think you may be, and learn you're just someone who wants to help them get to the next level of their life, their career, everything just sort of falls into place. But there is a difference, and there is a language, and there is a perspective that those of us that are baby boomers, and even those that are Gen X's, I've heard Gen X's say, I don't really get the Gen Z either, you know. So it is something that we all need to understand to make, you know, the communication of business and society really work. Because we all think as we're coming through in our 20s, we've got this. We really know how to do business and live our life. And we all do that. We did it when we were that age, and the next generations do it as well. So I won't steal any thunder of the book you're writing, but I think you're on to something that we all need to keep getting educated about.
Well, I love that, because that's right on point. That one of the things that I always start off with, I said, when did you have a generational moment at the office? And people have to sit down there and think about it. But I did this in my TEDx talk, which I said my generational moment was when I got on stage for a keynote one day and I put up a picture of John Travolta from Saturday Night Fever. And you got to remember, I'm from Brooklyn, and that nightclub from Saturday Night Fever was in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. That's the one we used to go to. That's the one I used to get into with my fake ID because I was still in high school. and so when I put up the picture, everybody knew who it was, except when I looked over to the right, there was this group of young ladies that they had this really that this face of like, I don't know what you're talking about. I looked at that. I said, you don't know who that is, do you? They said, no, we don't. I just assume everybody knew John Travolta from Saturday Night Fever. So when I got back home, I looked it up on the computer. Saturday Night Fever is almost 50 years old.
Wow.
You know? And so sometimes we don't realize what we're doing. Because it works for me, so it must work for everybody. And that's not the case. You always have to have that generational thing in there that they don't know. They might not know.
Right.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, we celebrated 24 years, not celebrate, but 24 years of 9/11. Well, there's a whole generation, this young generation, they don't know 9/11. They live through it. They don't know anything about it. And we always say, never forget, never forget, never forget. They never knew.
Yeah.
They can forget. So a lot of times we do things at the office. It's just rote. This is the way we've been doing it for, you know, 50 years. We're going to keep on doing it. And you can tell the young generation's upset because they're not listening. Nobody's listening to them, you know.
No, you know, it's funny, Peter. I had a head of sales of a major network. I'll keep his name in the network out. But again, people wouldn't connect the dot necessarily. But he was a guest lecturer, and he kept using names in the industry that we would all know. And at the end of the lecture, he said to me, "Boy, I didn't capture the attention of those students, did I?" And I thought he was going to be a home run. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, you kept mentioning names that no one knew who they were, and you didn't put it into context. You didn't say, well, Ray Warren, you would say, well, Ray Warren, blah, 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 blah. Well, who's Ray Warren?" You know?
Right.
So I think we all have, and even with your John Travolta, I was thinking about this, and you, as you were saying it, you almost need to, which is my learning experience from what you just said is, well, if you're going to put up a John Travolta, right? Well, say, John Travolta did this major movie, Saturday Night Fever. Think of him as the equivalent of fill in the blank to try to think of a young actor today. Okay, so John Travolta was fill in the blank today. Yeah, and they go, right. Okay. Mm-hmm, yeah. So, sort of put it in perspective. So it is a way to teach us all how to.
I had a moment last night, and this shows our age, right? 50 plus, watching Jeopardy. Three contestants. They could tell you the name of the 173rd smallest country in the world. They could tell you how long the Danube River is. Question came up. It was about names. And they talked about it was about a football team. So it was like, you know, New York Giants. And there was a question. Now, this is a man. The answer is a man who is the host of Good Morning America. He hosts at least two primetime old people game shows on the ABC television network. He's a Sunday analyst on the Fox network. And he's a Hall of Fame NFL defensive lineman who played for the New York Giants. And you all know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Michael Strahan. Mm-hmm. No one got it. So even somebody who still, I mean, forget John Travolta, right? To your point, Tony, about putting someone more current on. This is a guy who's like, oh. In my mind, he's like, I got enough Michael Strahan already. He's everywhere I go. Fox football, to Good Morning America, whatever. And these folks didn't know who Michael Strahan was. So we do live in a bit of a bubble. And to your point, Peter and Tony, I mean, you really do have to. And I don't know how easy it is. And I don't know if we do it. But it's an important thing is to keep that in mind all the time that you're, you know, we're, and that's what I talk about, bringing it back to the wisdom circle. You know, yeah. There might be people listening or watching now who don't know who Michael Strahan was. So shame on me for saying it to the three of us, old guys with white hair, older guys. And yet, you know, it's just, it's a different experience. They have a different life experience. To your point about no 9/11, that's a, you know, kids who grew up without cell phones. I mean, it's just a whole different world we're living in.
So, yeah, you know, it's interesting. John McGuire, who's the founder of this agency, made a, He did a really interesting talk to the young staff, and I never thought of it this way, but it was an interesting way to put it in perspective to them. He said, "Why do you think Tony's here? You know, probably doesn't need the money necessarily. This golf game, he's in Hilton Head. Why do you think he's here?" And he said, "You know, Tony never had kids. You know, which this Giant's a big believer of making things personal." He said, "You're now his kids. Mm. He wants to help you grow, teach you, make you better employees, whatever." And it was a good way. So then the students were like, and then again, I heard from some of the partners who are still young, "Oh, you mean I can call Tony if I have, like, I want to know something in perspective?" He says, "Yeah, that's why he's here. You know, take down the, you know, all the credentials, if you will. The credentials help you have the conversation, but, you know, make sure that you take down the barriers that people can actually learn from you." But I thought it was a very interesting and personal way to say to these young people, you know.
You know, they're trying to learn from each other. I don't think they trust us.
Yeah.
More than we didn't trust, like, you know, anybody who's over 30 years old, like back when we were growing up. Like, there were people we didn't. I had someone say to me once, "With all due respect, and I know you did really well and all is good, and you've got philosophy on one side and you've got tactical things on the other, I'm not sure how much I'm going to learn from a 60-year-old guy."
I don't believe you're saying that's.
I agree with you.
Huh? Yeah.
No, 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 no. Calm down, Mr. Sicilian. I'm going tomorrow. I'm going to Catania in the morning. That is the perception.
That's the perception, yeah.
Is that unless someone says what your guy, I forget his name, said, Bob or whatever, he's here to be your dad. He's here to, you're in a risk-free environment.
Right.
This guy knows, forgot more than you know. But if not, they get, and we heard this from the woman who was in Chicago, was on our podcast early on. She was going into graduate school about, they're more of a horizontal, they just take care of each other. They've had so much of their pandemic and school shootings and shooter drills and things we never experienced, right? And you look at, like, I don't want to get into politics, mm-hmm. or even big business, but you look up, you know, what do you look up to?
Yeah, no, right? You're right.
And, you're totally right. A good role model. So it's up to us. And Peter, I think your book is, I love it. But anyway, you want to say something for a bit now, Peter, and you are the guest, so go.
We do try to steal the thunder, Peter.
The floor is yours.
All right. I'm going to go back to something that that Tony says, because when I talk about the generations, I talk about how to collaborate better between the generations. And you hit it on the head, Tony. It's all about relationships. You know, in my keynote, I do this. I have a millennial son, and you can tell he's a millennial. He's got tattoo sleeves on his arms. And I have a Gen Z daughter. And she's a feisty one, that girl. And she works, she lives with us, and she works at this 5-star resort here in the Triangle. And she's a bartender at events. And they do these, it's a high-class place, and they do these events. So they had, I want to say it was the Lawyers Association, but it was a lot of boomers, mm-hmm. a lot of boomers at this thing. And my daughter loves AC/DC. The reason she loves AC/DC is because that's what she heard in the backseat of the car when we went on road trips. Because I did my job as a father to bring, you know, to bring the generation, mm-hmm. generational music down. And well, she saw him coming. She saw the Gen Z coming. She saw the baby boomer coming towards her, and he already had his $2 tip in his fingers. And she knew where he was gonna. What he was going to order. And excuse me, sir, can I help you? And he says, "Well, I'll have an old fashioned." She says, "Great." She starts making the old fashioned. She says, "Can I ask you a question?" And he said, "Sure." She goes, "What is your favorite AC/DC album?" And he took a step back and looked at her and said, "You know who AC/DC is?" She said, "Of course I do. My favorite album is Back in Black. What's yours?" And then a 5 to 10 minute conversation ensued about AC/DC. And she finally gave him his drink, put it down, and he was about to put the $2 tip in the jar, and he pulled back, put it back in his pocket, took out his wallet, pulled out a 20, put it in the jar. Anytime that guy needed a drink, guess where he went to? He went to her station, right? She came, now, we didn't raise a stupid daughter, okay? She rinsed and repeated that whole scenario all night long. When she came home, she busted through the door and said, "Dad, Mom, Dad, where are you?" I said, "Well, we're in here in the living room." She goes, Dad, I love you and I love AC/DC. I said, "Why?" She goes, "Tonight I made 6 Benjamins." The girl made $600 in tips just because she decided not to deal with differences between the generations. She bridged the gap between generations.
That's a great example.
She went down to talk to them where they live. And that's what I tell people. If you're a Gen Z and you see and you're at an event and you see a bunch of servicemen sitting at the table, go down and talk to them. Ask them about what happened in the wars. What happened in your life then? What was important back then? The same thing is if you're a boomer and you see a group of young Gen Z sitting in a place at lunch or something, sit down with them. Ask, "Hey, can I join you?" They would love to talk to you. They would just enjoy talking to you. And we don't do that. Why? Because we're set in our ways. We don't want to know what's going on with them. So I tell everybody, it's all about relationships. Start relationships with other groups.
Absolutely. And I think it's key, you know, you don't need to talk age. You don't need to say, you know, just be a person and talk to them and make it comfortable. But yeah, that's a great example. Because as Ray and I talk about in the Wisdom Circle, we're all learning from each other. And I think Ray just said that earlier. You know, it's a back and forth. So you keep your mind open, you know. You know, in business, we all saw these people. He was like, I got it. You know, they were know-it-alls at 35 years old. You know, now I shouldn't mention age, but they were, you know, just in their career to make an example. And it's like, you don't even know what's going to come in your funnel
exactly.
The next 20 years of your life. Mm-hmm. You know, so don't close the funnel at an early age and think you know it all. Keep the funnel open and keep learning and learning. So anyway, Ray, I'll throw it back to you.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, you know, kind of along the same lines of we can look at what younger generations are doing and wonder or say, man, I'd probably do that differently. But you have to realize the wisdom we've picked up, no pun intended, in our age now. But when we were their age, we didn't really know any better. You know, my son just had a little bit of a tough time with a real estate situation. Mm-hmm. And it was his first lease on an apartment. And so you want to kind of tell him, here's how it's going to play out. But it's his first lease. It's not my first business encounter. And so you just have to your point, mind the gap. You have to understand it. So I tried to bring it to, let's just take this one thought at a time. And then we resolved it. And he got out, you know, it worked out just fine for him. But I think a lot of times when we make a prejudgment about 35-year-olds or 30-year-olds or 27-year-olds, it's because we're taking a perspective that has been around longer.
Yeah.
So yeah, we just know more. Doesn't mean we're smarter, but we know more.
Yeah, I would ask. You know, when I get to groups, I always ask them. You know, if I see a Gen Z group, I said, "Tell me about boomers." Oh, they're old and stupid. And then if you ask a boomer about Gen Z, they're lazy and they don't want to work. You know, and then what happens is when we don't have the knowledge of something, we automatically go to something called negative bias, which is, I don't know about this, but I'm going to put it down because I don't know anything about it. And so what I tell people is you should go to positive bias. Instead of saying a boomer is old and stupid, you should think another way of saying they're experienced and have wisdom. Or Gen Z, they're not lazy and don't want to work. They're just more entrepreneurial and want to get there faster. So change the narrative from a negative bias to a positive bias. You're going to get to places a lot quicker. And that way you could talk to each other. Because one of the biggest things now in companies is they have intergenerational teams. You know, I worked on one. They used to call me, hey, Pops, you know, and I just let it go or whatever. But it's fine. But then I would rib them a couple of times too. But when push comes to shove and they didn't know what to do, hey, they walk into my office and say, hey, Peter, can you help me out here? I'm trying to figure out what direction is because I'm not sure. So everybody needs help. Even we need help because one of the things that companies are doing to meet this generational gap is the CEO of Heineken, a woman named Timone, she started mentoring. Well, we all know what mentoring is. We're going to put the experienced person and show the young person the ropes and everything. Well, they did something different where they did reverse mentoring, where they brought in the younger people to teach the older folks about technology, culture, things like that. And this would happen in the marketing department. And so the older senior level marketers implemented these things into the marketing plan, and they saw great increases in sales just because they're reaching more people that they weren't reaching before. So it's always a collaboration, which is what you need to get to. If you could get over the hump of judging and having negative bias.
I like that idea of positive bias. It's funny. When you said that, it occurred to me when you put the, and it's really interesting. I think you opened up a line of thought I wouldn't have had, Peter, which is, so the younger generation is more entrepreneurial and wants to get there faster, right? We grew up in a world where you got a, your dad got a watch after 25 years or 30, and they built their career at the same company, same period of time. And then we had kids, and the kids saw this success that we had had because of the ride we all took in the 80s and 90s, which was pretty spectacular and may never be seen again if you look at where the economy is. And I don't even start with AI and all that other stuff. And so why wouldn't they want to get there faster? They want to recreate the life they saw when they were growing up from the success of mom and dad, who might have spent 25 or 30 years getting promoted. We were in a good industry. The times were right. We were lucky, man. We were really lucky. And so it's just a different perspective of, yeah, they are entrepreneurial. They like the gig economy and they want to get there tomorrow. But that's how they want to be where we where they grew up. And if we weren't there when we grew up, I was, you know, washing dishes at a pancake house. But it does open up a different line of thought of, help me understand what you just said. Help me understand a little bit about this rush to, all right, so I want to be an award-winning journalist. What do I do? You know, write 10,000 articles, do 10,000 hours of research, the whole Michael, what's the name? Story of 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
So, Tony, what do you think about that negative? Because I think we both can have been, I would say, I won't say the word guilty. That sounds too judgmental. But I think we've both at times leaned harder on the negative bias versus a positive bias. I like this thing. Let's run with it.
Two thoughts. One is, as you were saying that, I was thinking that the younger generation has had young role models that are CEOs, Zuckerberg, you know, because of technology and whatever. So it's like, well, wait a minute. I don't remember having, you know, the CEOs as we were starting in our 20s were 50, 60 years old. And, you know, it was a clear pattern, you know, and really was a clear pattern probably up to about 15 years ago. It was a seniority thing. Never would have a 35-year-old jump over a 45-year-old at a corporation. I mean, I saw it at Anheuser-Busch.
You had to pay your dues.
You had to pay your dues. And
pay your dues, yeah.
You know, and my father ended up at the top of HR at RCA, but he spent 40 years to do it, you know, and he had to wait till that guy retired and that guy retired or that woman retired. So it's interesting. Their role models are different. And plus, with all the news and 24/7, they're seeing artists, musicians, athletes, you know, all make money at a young age, which we didn't really see. You know, Mickey Mantle maybe made $100,000 out. Understand that present value and all that. But Peter, what's interesting, and I could see art, because I'm thinking it, and so I can hear our audience thinking of it, you obviously have a great perspective, and you obviously, I'm almost visualizing some of your keynotes or your TED Talks. Where do you do that? And if people, and I assume you also do it at corporations, I'm not trying to prop up your bio, but, you know.
Why not?
Prop it up, Amy. I can use all the help.
but it seems like, you know, because I can tell by your language and your phrasing, you know, it's not your first rodeo as you speak about these things. So I think it'd be interesting to understand, you know, well, how do you get Peter A. to talk to your group or whatever? Or give an example of the things that you have done.
Sure. It was funny because I tell the story of when I wanted to be a speaker, and it was a long time coming. And so I finally, you know, a couple of years ago decided, okay, let's do this and let's go for it. And as you well know, you know, I spent, what, 34 years in corporate America. And when you get to do your own thing, you realize that, oh, I can't call the accounting department for that report. Oh, I travel. I can't call the travel department. Oh, I marketing. Who's doing marketing? Guess what? It's all here.
Yeah.
And one of the things you don't realize is when you become an entrepreneur and everything, and you have a budget, a lot of stuff you got to do on your own. So you spend a lot of time doing things that got to be done. And so, you know, now I'm writing a book. I spend a lot of time on that. And it's harder than I thought. It really is. I thought I'd just knock it out. And I have friends who've written books, and some have told me, yeah, they used the ghostwriter or the AI did it for them. But I don't want to do that. I'm old school, right? I don't want AI to write my own book or anything like that. So I'm putting in the time and effort. So I put out my shingle and everything. And I speak to associations and corporations, and that's what I've done. Like, for example, I spoke to the public works folks of North Carolina, their state conference and things like that. The Tax Assessors Association. I have a friend of mine who I used to work with, who's a advertising strategist. He does strategy. And he, just like Ray, he called me up. Hey, Peter, I love what you're doing. I see it on LinkedIn. And he called me up. He said, Peter, I love what you're doing. Let's sit down and talk. And we sat down and talked. And he says, you know what you are, Peter? He says, you're a blue-collar speaker.
Hmm.
And I said, wow, didn't see that coming. But, you know, he's right. I want to talk to people like the public works folks or the tax assessors or things like that. They're not glamorous or anything like that. You know, going to Google, everybody wants to speak at Google or Facebook or things like that. I'm good with going out to reach out these organizations that need the help in the generations and do that. So that's what I do. My website is peteraspeaks.com. Not very hard. I didn't use my last name in there to do anything. So it just, that's why I go by Peter Ray. And yeah. And so I also do workshops. I've done workshops for several companies, full day workshops just to help them. And those are enlightening to me when I go see them and I put people up against, you could tell the tension of people have these, you know, mindsets of, I don't know how we're going to get people to work for us if they don't want to work. And then the younger people said, you know, we've made several proposals to leadership and they do nothing. They don't listen to us.
Yeah. So
you get that, you know, you get it on all sides. And then of course, and I use the ends because the ends are the easiest, the boomers and the Gen Zs, but you got the Gen X and the millennials in the middle. And, you know, the Gen X are the forgotten generation. They feel like they're still ticked off because they didn't get any attention, and rightfully so. And the millennials are the tech folks. Just give me tech, 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 you know? And so you have all these converging different ideas going through. And if you have intergenerational teams at your office, you without even knowing it, you got problems. You have problems.
Well, you know, I did, you know, Ray mentioned AI. So my wife has a floral design business and she said, well, I'm using Q, you know, so I had the first said, well, what is Q? So long story short, I'm on the HOA of our neighborhood and we had our board meeting.
That's not
and
smart.
I had to do Ray warned them. So I did the minute. Well, I had to do the minutes. Because I'm, quote, the secretary of the board. So Wendy said, use Q. So you talk, you know, so it's an app. You talk into it, and say, here, you know, and it basically puts together a full formal presentation with proper English, proper sentences. And it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And it does it as almost as quick as you say it. And you just, you know, talk for, say, 20 minutes, stop it when you want to collect your thoughts, and then it comes back in this whole. So that's what this generation is growing up with, you know, good or bad. These tools are out there, ChatGPT, Q, on and on and on. So, again, I think as seasoned people, I like that terminology. You got to go use these things to understand how they're using it, particularly if you're teaching or guiding, whatever. So anyway, it's amazing.
Well, what Peter said about is one of those great sell points, by the way, Peter. I think it's got to be a door opener or closer in terms of making the deal. Whenever you invite anyone into your house to like look at a leak or, you have problems. But you said, you know, if you have young people and old people in a company, I don't have to, you got a problem. And that is 100% true. It's 100% true. So this call I had this morning before we got on was about a young person at a company who had reported something up. That person didn't do anything with it. And then it kind of blew up. And he was kind of called on the carpet. And they said, well, why didn't you tell me, buddy? And he's like, I did. And so it's like a perfect illuminator of what would you like me to do? And a lot of times it's because they tell the person in charge who might have some years on them, and they don't know what to do with it now.
Yeah.
Because the way the world has changed, they may not want to embarrass themselves and say, what are you talking about? AI, what? Sorry. Q, what's that? Or ChatGPT, and I'm right with Tony on that. It is, you know, I was thinking, so when we were growing up, we turned out to be baby boomers. Anybody who's born after 1954, I think, I think I'm like one of the first years of the baby boomers.
Yeah, it's 1948, 49.
Thank you. What did they do before that? I don't, like, we've talked about, we have Z's and X's and millennials and Y's and betas.
No, Tony, it wasn't 49. I don't think so. I'll go in the map again.
In the 1900s, I actually have it in here, but in the what did they call? There was never this segmentation, I don't think.
Yeah, there was. It was the from the 1900s. It was the greatest generation, and then it was the next one was the silent generation.
Look at you.
And then you got the baby boomers. And the baby boomers, I always the baby boomers were in the 50s something. I should have my chart.
No, I got it. I have it all right here. Yeah. Let's see. Generation Alpha, Gen X,
yeah.
Boomers. It says 1946 to 1964. 60 to 78 years old, the largest generation.
Sorry, Tony, it was 46. I thought it was 50. 40. Okay.
Even older than Tony.
Yeah.
You can imagine anything being older than Tony.
But you know what? This year, there's a new generation. It's called Generation Beta. I don't understand why they're not getting creative with names. They should get more creative.
And this Generation Alpha, 2012 to 2024. Yeah, they got it for everything. So to your point, though, I guess they've always named generations, but they just seem to.
Well,
you know, I was going to.
Brokaw, Tom Brokaw was the one that named the
greatest generation
because of the book. But what you were talking about there, that the kids today, they don't remember. And Tony, you would know this. If the client called up on a Saturday morning and said, hey, man, do you know what? Because I had this happen to me. I had a spot running on. This is a funny story because I bought the Today Show for, I think it was Royal Caribbean. And I bought some movies on. No, I, No, I bought the Today Show on a Saturday for Royal Caribbean Cruise Line. And what did they talk about was they did a segment on the Titanic. And I said, please do not run my spot after this. And they ran it. Okay. And so, God knows. And so, you know, a few minutes later, the phone rang and everything. And so now I'm calling up people and everything. But back in the day, somebody called you up on a Saturday. Yeah. I'm going at work. What did you do? You took care of the problem, right? What can we do? What can we do? If it went into Sunday, you worked on Sunday and everything. Today, office hours closed on Friday at 5 o'clock, you know, and you have to cultivate, you have to be able to cultivate a group that understands what you're trying to accomplish. Instead of saying to them that, hey, if I call you on Saturday at 8 o'clock in the morning, you better be ready because they're going to tell you to go take a hike. You're not calling me on Saturday morning.
Exactly.
You have to cultivate that culture of, hey, this is our client. This is what we have to do. You have to prepare them for it. You just can't take it for rote that they're going to agree with you on everything you do.
Yeah, absolutely true.
Well, you know, it's sort of like, I'll use a phrase from Lombardi where I always think he's a great example. And I know I produced a play on Lombardi, but he took a team that was 3-10. Like 3 years in a row, and used the same players. This was before free agency, and turned them around to win 5 out of 7 NFL championships and the first 2 Super Bowls. And it all was about building the culture. And it may sound stern, but his line was, there's planes, trains, and automobiles leaving Green Bay every day. If you don't want to buy into this culture, that's fine. But move on. I want people, we'll have fun doing this and we'll be successful, because I believe most people would rather sacrifice a little bit to be part of something great, part of something that's winning, part of something that's successful. Why would you want to be lazy and just go through the motions your whole life about something that's really sort of not terribly attractive? But it's all selling it in. I actually used it in my presentation to this young agency. I said, I used quotes from philosophers, Plato, Aristotle, Confucius, and you realize, talk about generational change, things said 300 BC are words and phrases that we use today, or philosophies, literally philosophies we use today. So example, Plato said, you'll learn more from an hour of fun from somebody than a year of conversation. You know, so how many meetings where you have the, you know, let's all get together, let's go bowling, let's go to karaoke. It takes all the thing away. And now you get to know people who they really are, right? I think Aristotle said, making things simple is hard, right? But people, you know, always find a way to complicate things. You know, it's okay to have a 5-page presentation with three bullet points on each page, if that makes your point. But so many people are conditioned. I don't know whether it's the college philosophy or professors that you're doing term papers and that you feel they have to be 20 pages and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, business isn't that way. You know, it's like you're trying to get your point across. You try to get a point simple and let's go charge up the hill. So, you know, so I would say to people, you know, look back at some of the things that were said, you know, generals, football coaches, college CEOs, they just repurposed the words that were said thousands of years ago. There you go.
One a day.
What's today's highlighted philosophy? As we wrap up here at 40.
Yeah. I was letting you go, Tony, but then there's going to be time to call the 5-minute warning.
But what's the philosophy today? That'd be a good way to end, other than thank you, Peter.
Yeah, Peter will get the last word. Today is September 26th, my daughter's birthday.
That's nice.
It's from Eric Fromm, Social Psychology, Influence of Society on the Individual. I'll just read the last paragraph because we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Fromm used the example of consumer culture to illustrate the influence of society on the individual. He argued that the constant pursuit of material goods and status, driven by social pressures, often leads to a sense of emptiness and dissatisfaction. This focus on external validation undermines genuine self-worth and personal fulfillment.
There you go.
Peter. So much fun having you. I told you it would go fast.
Well, it has gone fast, and I thank you. Ray, it's great to be with you here, and I really appreciate you getting me on the show. And Tony, you know, like I said earlier, AB royalty, just, you know, we just got to.
You're too kind.
He loves it.
Go back to my advertising days up in New York and stuff, you know, going to the upfronts and all
right
that.
Place at the right time. Take the ride and don't fall off.
We're all lucky.
That's right.
So good luck with your book. I mean, I think it's great. I think Mind the Gap is a great, well, that's not the title necessarily, but it's a good
story. That's where it is right now, but we'll see, right. You know?
It could be we've got a problem. Think about it.
Houston, we have a problem.
There's so many ways. I tell you what, writing a book is really hard.
I don't know anyone, and I've not written one because everyone I've ever talked to, Tony wrote one. I know other people. If I thought it was going to be this hard, they asked Barry Diller on CNBC, why is the second half of the book kind of more general? The first half is just so specific. And he said, I got tired. It was writer's fatigue. I just couldn't do it anymore. So congrats to you both, Tony, for the completing of one. And Peter, we look forward to buying yours.
Awesome.
Maybe you'll sign it too.
Thanks, all right. Peter.
Thanks, everybody.